Hey there, everybody. It is Thursday, December 27th, 2012, our last show of 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email, send it on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could, and of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a jam-packed last show of 2012 we have for you. We must get started with our first guest. Netta Ulaby reports on arts, entertainment, and cultural trends for NPR's Arts Desk. She's won fellowships and awards, and she's hosted podcasts and done stuff, but I don't want to waste time introducing her because she's one of my most favorite people to have on this show. Netta Ulaby, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Well, thank you so much, and I think you should actually add at this point that I am a part-time staff member at The Show Is So Gay because I feel like I've been such a repeat offender.
This is your four-year anniversary on This Show Is So Gay.
I remember.
Of course I remembered. So that was the good news. The part where I'm a little I wasn't going to tell you this, but I just want to come clean because we, you know, it's our moment of honesty, Netta, is that this is episode 195. And last time you were on episode, you know, like 97 or something, and you said, why aren't I 100? So in my head, I'm pretending this is episode 200.
You know, that's the nicest thing that anyone has ever done for me on our four-year anniversary being on a radio show. Thank you.
Oh, we should tell Robin that. All right. Well, we have so much to talk about. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. And yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. Netta Ulaby's back on the show for the fourth time. We must talk about NPR. First, can you explain to people, we haven't even done the basics with your past appearances on the show, and talk about what exactly you do there. How do stories come to you? How do you come to report on what you report?
Well, I come up with ideas, or other people do, and I am then assigned either the ideas that I pitch or I am assigned them. And then I go out and I talk to people and I get sound and I think about everything in terms of what it's going to sound like on the radio. I get the sound, I put it all on my computer, and then I sweat for sometimes for minutes, sometimes for hours, often for weeks, to get what ends up being 2 or 3 minutes of a piece.
Nice.
On the air.
Now, I have previously encountered technical difficulties. Have you ever had that experience?
Oh, never.
Never?
No, that never happened. It happens all the time.
Have you ever lost content?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, it just happened to me yesterday.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it did. It was such a drag. It was just such a drag. There's this, I don't know how technical you want to get because I think it's really boring, but you know how there's an app for everything?
Of course.
There's an app now where you can get studio quality sound from an iPhone.
Really?
And check this out. The guy I was interviewing, he was on his iPhone and he accidentally turned off the app with his face while we were talking. And he had no way of knowing, and I had no way of knowing. And it was a lesson learned, Ken. It was a little lesson learned.
There are some times that I lose content, and I just can't go back to the guest and tell them we have to do it again. I'm too mortified.
When I was trying to get my job as a reporter, I was a production assistant, and I was a very old production assistant. And I was given an assignment to go to New York City, which was a big deal, and interview a very famous film executive. The guy who brought us Brokeback Mountain and
his
brother. So I go and I talk to the guy and I interview him and he was so generous with his time. I talked to him for about an hour and I came back to DC, put the sound into the computer. I was so excited and there was nothing.
Oh my gosh.
And I really just cried.
I've done it. I've done it.
And at that time, you know, I really felt like my job was riding on it. So I called. What I ended up doing was I couldn't turn around and go back to New York. So I paid someone out of my own pocket to go to the guy and hold up a microphone and record him while I talked to him on the phone. And he was very, very, he was a little exasperated, but he let me sort of recreate the hour-long interview in about 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
No one was the wiser except for me.
Now, I don't know what goes through your head, but when it happens to me, the first thing I automatically think is, oh, God, this never happens to Ari Shapiro. Do you think that as well?
I don't think anything bad ever happens to Ari
Shapiro. I think, have you seen his hair? It's so great.
You know, I think some people are evidence that the human race is evolving. They're like these steps. They show us what, you know, the next evolution of human is going to be. And I would definitely put Ari Shapiro in that category.
In the future, we're all going to do parkour and jump on walls and stuff. He's just the next step.
That's exactly exactly right.
And to be fair, it's not just with radio stuff. Anytime something happens to me in life, I the first thing I think is, oh, I bet this never happens to Ari Shapiro. So, you know, it's not even specific to radio. It's my baseline, Netta. It's my baseline. Well, speaking of Ari Shapiro and NPR and talking more generally, you are, of course, on This Show Is So Gay. NPR, huge gay following.
Really?
The gays love the NPR.
I think it's because of how we dress.
Tell us. Well, we can't see how you dress.
Right, you can imagine what we wear, and whatever we're wearing is honestly so much more, well, actually so much less fabulous than whatever you have in mind.
I always imagine Birkenstocks.
Yeah, well, they're fabulous Birkenstocks.
Oh, yeah, tailored. They're totally tailored and slim fit. Exactly. I think they're slim fit.
Mine have heels.
How gay is it there as someone who works there?
Well, you know, I actually joke that gaydar is broken at NPR.
Really?
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of very, very lipsticky lesbians.
Okay.
There are a lot of straight women who look like they're lesbians, but they're not.
There you go.
There are a lot of very sensitive metrosexual men who just baffle everybody. And then there's some gay guys.
Yeah. Where were you in that mix? I didn't even know where to put you on that spectrum.
Oh, I'm sort of I guess I'm sort of stealth lesbian.
Love it. Love it. Well, as a journalist, as you are, and arts and culture correspondent, how is your lens in looking for stories and covering stories affected by your sexual orientation, or is it?
I think I have been gay so long, I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
I used to run a gay newspaper, and when I did that, I thought about every story through the lens of sexuality. You know, mine, the people I worked with, the queer community, and I really don't do that anymore. I mean, I think that right now, because I'm representing, you know, America,
right.
It's really my job to bring as many perspectives as I possibly can, particularly ones not my own.
Gotcha.
So I'm always thinking about, I'm very interested in telling stories that aren't getting told. And I feel so lucky right now, Ken. I don't know if you feel the same way, that we gay people have gotten very, very good at telling our stories.
Yeah.
You know, do you feel that way?
Oh, I really do. You know, we were talking about this on a show. Actually, we're talking about it on a show coming up with Matthew Breen, the editor-in-chief of The Advocate. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Out Magazine's choice of, I don't know if you saw this, of Nate Silver mm-hmm. as their person of the year. And Nate, I don't have the quote right.
Ethnically straight.
Yes. And I really struggled with that. Uh-huh. And my buddy Jody, when we covered the news on this last week, we talked about it, and we'll be talking.
Jody, tell her hi.
Yeah, I will tell her hi. I don't let her on the show with you anymore because you just talk to her. So it's just me and you. I learned my lesson from 3 years ago. Know your audience. So, but Matthew Breen reflected on it, Jody and I reflected on it, and I just don't want it to go so far that it's important to us to lose the gay label.
You know, I don't think we ever, ever will. You know, there are just too many. And you know what? There have always been people who have been ethnically straight. There's so many. You know, I know straight people who are basically ethnically gay. Do you
there
know
you
what
go.
I mean?
Exactly.
You know what? I think that's fine. I think it's great for people to make their choices and live their life, you know? And I don't know about you, but I have days when I'm basically ethnically straight. And then I have days when I'm so lesbian.
I think I had a day like that in 2002, maybe. But no.
When you were ethnically straight.
Yeah.
Did you watch a game and like eat?
I think my mom and I went to the mall. No, I was pretty gay that day. No, I don't know. I don't know. But it's fun to play. It's fun to play. Now, that said, I still can take some of your stories and turn them into gay stories, as I've done for this week's episode. And some of them are a little easier than others.
It's true.
Okay. So first, and all these different things that I was listening to of yours, R. Kelly's queer campy closet reopens. Mm-hmm. That's some video there.
Yeah, have you watched this?
I have. You know, you give it a shout out in – well, first tell us the premise of this piece that you did, and then I'll reflect.
You know, R. Kelly is such a fascinating figure. He is – I mean, you know, I talked to this wonderful guy named Jason King who teaches at NYU, and he's one of my go-to people. And he believes that R. Kelly is really one of the most important male singers in R&B really for the past two decades. And he really is a tremendous singer with a very you know, a very troublesome set of accusations that have been made about him, but none of them have ever been verified as far as I know. So he started making these videos, Ken, and started with a tiny little budget where he's telling the story about a man literally trapped in a closet.
He
jumps into the closet when the woman he's having sex with is surprised by her husband. So even though we think of in the closet as being a straight thing, or sorry, a gay thing, it's straight, at least in the premise. But then we move on to this soap opera that involves, you know, queer characters and people on the down low and people and proud out gay people.
Yeah.
And, you know, R. Kelly is definitely fascinated by people hiding stories about their sex lives and people's sex lives, and who isn't, you know?
Exactly. How many times have you watched it?
Honestly, not as many as I would have liked to. I consumed them all. I watched the first set when they came out, and then I rewatched them all before the second set, but I haven't seen all of the new ones, to be honest.
Okay.
I did the piece before they started airing. What do you think about them?
I have to say, and I certainly acknowledge, as you do in the piece, that he was acquitted of his charges, but it's quite the specter that hangs over it all, and it certainly colors the way that I watch them. They're oddly riveting, but kind of in a rubbernecking kind of way.
Yeah. And it's a little discomforting
that
someone who has been accused of something as awful as urinating on an underage girl is telling these stories in which he's talking about having sexual secrets.
Right. And, you know, it was always a thing with R. Kelly because all those allegations came out at the same time that he believed that he could fly. And it was just a weird confluence for me. So I've always been kind of turned off by him, and then these videos come out, and it's one of those things where, exactly like you said, it's the closet, so you kind of feel like there should be some touch point here of identification, but I just, it's bizarre to me.
No, you know something kind of interesting is one of my editors has this theory, and I would love to know what you think about it, that the difference between being an actor or any other kind of art form and a musician is when a musician sings a song, you always assume that it's about the musician's actual life.
Right.
And that it's a lot harder for us. And like, I was just listening to myself and I said he, referring to his character, but I was kind of mixing up R. Kelly and his character, and it's a lot easier to mix up a musician and the persona they're inhabiting in a song than with anything else.
It is. Because I always believe that Taylor never ever wants to get back together again. I don't think that's a character. I think she's talking to any number of gentlemen.
Yes.
So any number of them. Some right in the area here in southern Vermont. So it's very fascinating. Very fascinating. All right, so there's that story. And then now folks have to go listen to this one because this is my favorite one. The whole piece that you did on That's So Random.
Oh yeah.
Which obviously appeals to me as someone who wrote 200 pages on the phrase "That's So Gay" and got a PhD out of it.
Love that.
I felt like there were a lot of parallels here in the work that you did on this piece. Tell everyone about "That's So Random."
Well, you know, I love doing language pieces. It's not the only one I've done, but that is definitely the most recent. And that was actually came out of an argument I was having with my editor about the misuse or the supposed misuse of the word random. You know, and people have these kind of conversations all the time, like literally is a word that can really get some people fired up. Random got her fired up. And I really kind of did this piece in part to show her that she was wrong.
I love that you use the... Now, I have to say, I was going to make fun of you for that, but I'm oft made fun of because I perhaps use my Huffington Post column to get back at friends of mine. So I hear what you're saying. I do it as well.
Right. Well, you know, fortunately, I think people who read the Huffington Post and people who listen to NPR are also people who nitpick about language and worry about its degradation.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, you know, it seemed perfectly appropriate. You know, you were asking about the gay lens. I guess, you know, the lens that I apply are, would this interest me and would it interest my dad?
Right. Oh, interesting.
Definitely ethnically straight.
Let's just put that out there right now.
You know, and who's a scientist. And, you know, he and I are extremely close, but we couldn't be more different in our interests or what we think is funny or in any number of things. And if I'm pretty sure something would interest both me and my dad, I'm okay with it. And if I'm not sure, part of how I approach pieces is how can I make this interesting for my dad?
And is he interested?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Well, maybe just because I'm his kid.
That's fine. We like that investment. Yeah. Well, this was, I loved this piece. I love this piece. And I, every time you said random, I substitute the word gay, and I actually got a lot out of it that way too. So you can do that. You can just substitute any words you want, folks, and it becomes a whole different piece. So if you're the right kind of delusional, you can make it happen. And then there was the newest piece about this Real Life Santa's Workshop, and I couldn't make that one gay, unless you can.
Are you kidding? I mean, there are elves in it. What is more gay than elves?
Okay, there you go. Look at the talent that you have. Look at that. Now, you mentioned even Huffington Post writers, and we have a lot of essayists on the show, and we often talk about the comment section. And the media that you use is not necessarily where you get that instant feedback that other people get through the comment sections, but each of your stories has its own page, and there is a comment section. Do you read the comment?
Sometimes.
Okay.
I used to. You know, I was reading.
And then what happened?
Well, you know, I was reading this the biography by the ethnically straight Rachel Dratch.
Yes.
Actually, she's, I think, completely straight, not just ethnically. She's obviously completely straight. She jokes a lot about playing lesbians. So she was the Saturday Night Live performer who was kind of in the same class as Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, but didn't quite catapult to the I have my own TV show level of fame.
Right.
So she wrote a book, and I just finished reading it. And my point was...
I love that you just got paid for a plug for Rachel Dratch's book, and there might not even have been another point.
No, my point was that... when she first started on Saturday Night Live, she talks about how she and her coworkers referred to reading things about themselves online as cutting. That it was like, it was basically like self-mutilation because it felt so bad. Now, some comments are intended to be helpful or to point things out or to have a conversation, but a lot of those comments are just mean.
Yeah, they are. And the Huffington Post wants you to respond to them, mm-hmm. and I did that for a little bit, and then you actually can't win. And I like winning, mm-hmm. so I don't do it anymore.
Yeah, you know, I don't know very many journalists. There is a certain kind of person who loves jousting with commentators.
Yeah, it's not me.
And I don't. And the thing is, like, if someone writes me directly, I always respond. Always.
Yeah.
And it's not like my email, nulaby@npr.org,
nice.
Is hard to find. I am so happy to engage with someone who takes the time to contact me directly or call me. But the commentators, it's, you know, they're anonymous. There's something that can feel very cowardly about, you know, running. It's like putting on a mask and running up to someone and throwing a pie in their face.
I'm actually surprised that I would think that NPR, of all places, could just totally take a stand and say, you know what, we're not taking comments. If you want to comment, contribute to our pledge drive.
Well, you know, I think it's a good thing not to make these things too conditional. I don't know. I mean, like I say, some journalists with, you know, stiffer backbones than me have no problem jousting with commentators. It just, you know, the cost-benefit analysis that I get out of it.
There you go.
Yeah.
I agree. You know, we were actually just, a friend and I were just talking about Rachel Dratch yesterday because she got into it with Tracy Morgan.
Uh-huh.
And they had a little bit of beef. And because someone asked me if I watched 30 Rock. Now, here you are, arts and culture correspondent. I don't watch 30 Rock. And I actually said this on the show years ago because Tracy Morgan had all of the homophobic things that he was putting out there. And I just couldn't bring myself, even tying it back to R. Kelly, to separate out the person from the character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know about that. I'm still sticking with it, though.
You know, I love Tina Fey so much that I would watch her do anything.
She's great.
Literally anything. Any random thing she wanted to do, I would literally watch.
Love it. Now, we have to update people on your life. Would you call yourself a Vermonter?
I would call myself a wannabe Vermonter.
Okay. I did not see you at the Strolling of the Heifers last year.
You know, I've never been to the Strolling of the Heifers.
I don't understand.
And, you know, and I am more of a wannabe central eastern Vermonter.
Oh.
No, sorry, central western Vermonter.
Central western.
I don't even know my Vermont geography well enough to confidently say which part of it I occasionally visit.
You're talking to the right person, though, because I think past exit 3 on 91, it just drops off. So I didn't even know there was anything above there. So it's fine. It's totally fine. And can we, if we may delve a little bit, I would imagine that your home life was quite enjoyable after the November election. Not that it isn't always enjoyable, let's be very clear.
Always enjoyable. I had a great time during the elections because I got to go cover them, which as an arts and culture person, I don't often get to do.
How did that happen?
Well, I asked.
Nice.
I somehow got pulled into the last election because a real reporter was busy doing something really investigative and intense, and I happened to be in the right place and right time, and I had a great time, and it worked.
Raised your hand. You said, I covered Courtney Love. I can do this.
Exactly. Once you cover Courtney Love, you can do anything.
You really can.
So I got sent to North Dakota, which is a lot like covering Courtney Love.
Oh, I have so many metaphors I could use right now, but keep going.
So I had a great time. I went with a young producer who's gay. You'll be happy to hear. And he and I were hanging out with a bunch of supporters of the Republican candidate for the Senate. It was a very tight race there.
Okay.
And it was fascinating. It was so much fun to be talking to these people and learning about, you know, where they were coming from and hanging out with the North Dakota Public Radio people. Were amazing. I had a brilliant time. It's so much fun.
I love the idea that someone was sitting around saying, we need somebody for North Dakota. Get me Olaby.
I know. That actually happened. Can you believe that?
Who could we get to go to North Dakota? Olaby. Send Olaby.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. The joke actually was, there was a little bit of a joke. My partner, you know, does political consulting.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, she went to Seattle to run Maria Cantwell's campaign. She was the U.S. Senator from Washington State. So I went to L.A., and I was in L.A. for 3.5 months while she was in Seattle. And so I was joking that I should be assigned to cover Maria Cantwell's opponent.
Let's play that out for a second. How do you feel that would have gone over?
As I say, it was 100% a joke.
Oh, I would have played with that.
We stay away from each other's respective sandboxes.
Now, I'm thinking about running for higher office. Do we think that she would consult for me?
I'm sure she would love to.
I want to be the first gay Vermont governor.
Oh.
Out gay. I should say out gay. That's what we've learned. And I had Howard Dean on the show a few weeks ago, and he said I could do it, although I think he had to leave and he wasn't listening anymore. So that's okay.
I think you should do it.
All right. All right. We'll keep our eye on
it.
What stories are you working on that are coming up?
Oh, I am working on a story about, you'll like this one. It's about how it feels to many people that the amount of time that trends and memes and online games and things we do online, they used to hold our attention for, you know, weeks, even months sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
Now it just feels like they just flicker in and out of our consciousness.
And gone.
And gone. And gone. Yeah.
Who do you interview for something like that?
Well, this time, does this happen to you? I got the idea partly from this New York Times article where a guy talking about the popularity of the games, like Farmville kind of games on Facebook, he said, it was such a wonderful quote, he said, the half-life is shortening, the decay curve is getting smaller. And I called him up and I was like, this is such a great idea for a piece. Will you talk to me about it? And he was like, yeah, sure, but I can't do it right now. And then he never returned any of my other phone calls.
Yes, I've had that happen.
So I had to come up with a bunch of people besides him.
And when are we looking for that to come out? That sounds great.
I don't know. I just finished it, to be honest, and I don't know what the air date's going to be yet.
Very exciting. Very exciting. New Year's plans, this being our last show of 2012. Oh. How are you ringing in the gay new year?
You know what? I'm actually going to do it in a fairly gay way, to be honest. I have plans with some friends to go to a place in Washington, D.C. called Annie's Paramount Steakhouse. Do you know about Annie's Paramount?
I don't.
It is the gayest steakhouse probably on the East Coast.
Wow.
So we're going to go there, and then we're going to go to a lesbian bar.
That sounds like a full night.
I think it's going to be fun, and we're all kind of old at this point, so I don't think our ambitions are to do anything more than
She's 28, folks.
That's right.
She's 28.
You're so kind.
You know, the only image I have of you is sitting around on Christmas watching Prince Caspian, so let's just put that out there.
Right.
It will forever remain in my mind. Just want to say that. Well, that's exciting. All right, so we have that piece coming out. And so tell folks where they should go again to find out about all the cool stuff that you're doing.
To Annie's Paramount Steakhouse.
Oh, my gosh. I would love the idea of there's going to be a flash mob now there of the Show Is So Gay listeners that are going to surround
you. Desperate to hear, you know, my pieces about random.
They are. When you hear the Courtney Love song start playing,
right.
You know that it's my people. That's what gets my people together.
You know, I think that Courtney Love is one of those ethnically gay people.
Well, and I have to tell you, and I know that we've talked about this before. We talked about it 4 years ago when you were first on. But if folks have not heard your piece called Gotta Give 'Em Hope, The Legacy of Harvey Milk, it is one of those pieces that, I'm not saying that all of your pieces don't do this, but this piece in particular is just relevant every single day of the week. It's just one of those, it doesn't matter what point of time you're at, people can take from this piece and be inspired and know about flawed heroes. And that's what this show is all about, you know, is about how do you use your voice in a unique way to create change. And you do so well to highlight that story.
Thank you. You know, that is one of my favorite pieces I've ever done, and it was a really, really special piece to work on. I felt incredibly close to Harvey Milk while I was working on that piece, and I can't tell you what a privilege it was to work on it.
Gotta give him hope, so folks go listen to that. Does it feel like 4 years ago that you did that?
Mm-mm.
No. It's like yesterday.
But you know how it is? Like, sometimes it feels like yesterday, and sometimes it feels like 20 years
yeah,
ago.
You were 24 when you did
That's
that
right.
piece. I'm just going to perpetuate that as long as possible.
I love this kind of myth-making.
If folks want to email you, what do they do?
They go to Annie's Paramount Steakhouse. They can email me at NULABY at NPR.org, and they can comment away on any of my stories if
Lovely.
They care to, and I will respond.
Now, I must say, you don't even know it, but you had the Facebook comment of the week last week. You won an award. It's not a tangible award, but because you had this great comment, and I wish I had it word for word in front of me, about someone making a comment to you about all the funny names there at NPR.
Now, I have to say that so many nice things have been happening since we started talking on the phone. I get secrets revealed, and I get Facebook awards, and why do we talk so rarely?
It's been a year. I know, and especially you're in Vermont. Come on, when you're up here, come say hi.
I shall. We are planning. We'll be up over the summer.
Lovely.
I don't know exactly when. Maybe in May. Are there any heifers running in May?
I'm not even going to embrace that one. But the strolling of the heifers, I can't. I'm an elected official right now, Netta. I can't lose my title right now. But yes, the strolling of the heifers is, almost got in trouble, is the first weekend in June. But we'll talk about that. I'll tell you my plans off the air, and then I'll meet you at the steakhouse.
All right.
Okay. Netta Ulaby, I can think of no better way, and certainly no more consistent way, for me to ring in the holiday season and the new year than having you on the show. You must know that you're one of my favorites.
Oh, well, and vice versa. Thank you so much for having me on. I can't wait to finally see you in your Birkenstocks.
Slim fit. Netta Ulaby, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have more guests for you on this last show of the year. Robin Cloud is a comedian, a writer, an actor, a singer, a songwriter. She's the host and producer of the critically acclaimed live comedy show, The Triple Minority Report. She's appeared at the Women in Comedy Festival, the Ohio Lesbian Festival, the Fresh Fruit Festival, the Emerging Artist Festival. She's been named one of Go Magazine's 100 Women We Love. She hosts the hilarious web series is Driving While Black, and her talk, Come Out, Stay Out, can be seen at a college near you. Robin Cloud, our very last guest of 2012.
Woo!
I know. Welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank Oh my gosh, I love that it's so gay.
You're closing out. You have to, in some ways, I don't want to put any pressure on you. In some ways, you have to be the gayest because you're last.
Oh, I can do that. I'm the gayest. I'm 9 years old. Wearing my Oshkosh Bagosh overalls and plaid shirt and Velcro sneakers. So I can do that.
You're on it. You're on it. And it's cool that right this second I'm wearing Oshkosh Bagosh.
No. Are you really?
No.
No. Do they even make, are they still in business? I'm sure they are.
I would like to believe that they are. And let's end 2012 on a hopeful note, Robin.
Yes, let's.
Triple minority, whatever are you referring to?
Well, I'm a comedian. I've been in the business for about 8 years now. And unfortunately, the comedy business is kind of segregated. So you've got, like, the gay show, the urban room, which includes all brown people.
Nice.
And Puerto Ricans and Dominicans and other Latinos. And then you've got, like, the underground room, and it's, like, young, dorky white guys. And so I have friends in all of those rooms, and I was like, why can't I have a show where all of my friends perform in the same show? Like, do I really have to bounce around town?
Right.
So I came up with this idea, the Triple Minority Report, because I'm also black, I'm a woman, I'm a lesbian, and I wanted to bring all those different factions of my life together.
Nice.
And so that's what the show is about. Like, you can come and you'll see a urban comic.
We'd love that.
A gay comic. Like,
look at
right
that.
After that one. So.
And they're all together.
And they're all together. One big, happy, comedic family.
Well, we have had so many comics on the show over the past 4+ years. Our favorite group of people to have on. Our favorite question for you, Robin Cloud, where do you find the funny?
Oh, my God. Every minute of the day. Seriously, like, now I'm in L.A., so it's a little bit harder to find the funny because I'm not assaulted by people all the time.
And because you have to drive to the funny.
And I have to drive to the funny. That's why I started my series. I was like, I have to keep talking. But normally, I find the funny just, like, literally walking out of my house. Something always happens to me, especially in Brooklyn, where I've been living for the past, like, 13 years. I don't know why, but people constantly talk to me. Like, the homeless guy on the street, just the crazy lady, the crazy cat lady, you know. I don't know why. I must have, like, some aura that just says, talk to me, because everyone is always talking to me. So I find that just in daily life, I'm able to come up with, like, some serious humor.
Tell us about that first night on stage. What do you remember about that first night on stage?
Well, the first night on stage, it wasn't even a stage.
It never is.
It was a kind of dimly lit corner. And I went to some bar. I think it was in Brooklyn for sure. I think it was on Atlantic Avenue, if I remember correctly. Maybe like in Cobble Hill or something. And they had an open mic night. And back then I was drinking. I don't drink anymore because it helps me keep my sanity, not drinking. So I was drinking and I got drunk and I just like went up there and literally laughed my way through my own high school recollections. And no one was laughing except for me, but I had the most amazing time.
So and one of the tips that you might give to people on their first night, not as much alcohol.
Not as much alcohol. And you might want to consider spending a few moments writing a joke.
There you go. See, I learned on my first night, if you're going to make jokes about your mom, maybe not have her in the audience.
Oh, God, no.
And how gay was your act that first night?
You know, my act wasn't gay for a while.
Yeah.
I did mostly, like, race stuff and observational humor to get started. And then I was like, all right, I got to talk about some gay stuff. I remember there was a moment where I was like, I need to write some gay jokes. And I started getting gigs at, like, gay clubs. And it's like, all right, it's cool to be, like, the black girl on the show, but why not be the black gay girl?
Look at that.
Yeah, exactly.
There's not a lot of those.
There aren't a lot of black lesbian comics. There aren't.
There's Wanda Sykes.
Wanda Sykes, Gloria Bigelow.
Oh, of course.
Of mine. And I don't know.
And there you go. That's the whole.
And me.
Well, that and it is widely known in entertainment circles that you three are the holy trifecta.
I would like to think so.
We're putting it out there. You're the last guest of the year. We get to just establish that.
Excellent.
Awesome. Now, I was watching the newest episode of Driving While Black.
Yes.
I have some issues.
Uh-oh. Bring them on.
First of all, did you see me out your window with the whole, it's 70 degrees, take off your chunky scarf? What are you trying to say?
You know, people out here in L.A., it kills me because as soon as the temperature drops, like, below 65, they start wearing, like, North Face bubble coats. And they're wearing, literally, I went for a walk this morning, someone was wearing earmuffs. I'm like, are you serious? You have no idea what cold is. Like, I'm from Connecticut. I survived cold. So, Connecticut in the 80s is a whole different time now. Before global warming, we had snow.
Well, so first it was like, all right, she's commenting on my wardrobe. That's fine. It is what it is. And then you took it a step further and you decided to make a comment about my Christmas Day plans.
Uh-oh.
I lost
all my gay male fans.
They're gone. I did a poll. You were polling really high before episode 4, and then you made a comment, perhaps disparaging those of us who will be seeing Les Miserables on Christmas Day. What was that about?
I know. I'm going to go see it. I have to now. Like, for material's sake, I have to go see it. I never saw it on Broadway, which, you know, I try not to tell any of my white gay male friends.
Well, I can. Mine is worse.
Me up and make me watch it.
My story is worse. I saw it on the first date with my ex-husband. How did we expect that marriage to survive when our first date is watching a musical where everybody dies?
And then what do you talk about at dinner?
Exactly.
It was amazing. Never want to see you again.
Let's get married and see how long it lasts.
Oh, God.
Are we done? All right, we should shine the red light on each other because that's what they do in the musical. All right, so you are going to go see it then. But can you? Are you able to sum up for people who have not yet seen episode 4 what perhaps you say about that? I was laughing so hard.
I think it's odd that they would come out with, I mean, everyone knows what Les Mis is about. So, you know, it's a historical French piece and it's just like, oh, people dying. And I just feel like the French Revolution, right? And so I just find it's a very odd topic and super depressing film to have on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. And I was like, is this supposed to be a present? Like, white people dying? Like, I don't understand what they're trying to say here. Is this supposed to be, are we supposed to be happy about this film opening on Christmas Day? The day that Jesus was born.
For us gay Jews, it's fine. It's totally fine. I don't even know what you're talking about. It makes sense. It just makes sense. Now, you know some people that I do not know. And I'm wondering if you can tell our listening audience about some of these people that you know that they might not know. Tell us about Jerry Beige.
Oh, Jerry Beige. Jerry Beige is like the first character that I developed. When I started, I was walking in Brooklyn one day, walked past this tag sale, and I just saw this pair of blue blocker sunglasses.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody remember those? And they were 25 cents. And I was like, oh, I love these. And I put them on, and I went home, I put them on, and then I looked in the mirror, and I just started talking like this woman. And this voice came out, and then, like, a few weeks later, I found this wig, and then a few weeks later, I found this shirt and these horrible pants. And all of a sudden, Jerry Beige was born.
Look at that.
And Jerry Beige is a senior citizen, half Italian, half Jewish lesbian, who was fired from the MTA for having a mental breakdown while driving her bus in Brooklyn. And now, in her free time, she takes the acceptor ride, really, to clubs, community centers, and she gives sex advice to the youth. Of America.
Now, how do you think, and maybe even in character, how would Jerry Beige describe Robin Cloud?
Well, Jerry Beige, I'm Jerry, and let me tell you about Robin. She's amazing. She came in one time because I think she was visiting her aunt at the senior center where I play bingo, and there was no seat. And I gave her my seat, and we had this whole tussle about who was going to take the seat. And finally, I won. I took the seat. But then she just chatted with me, and she's very she's very, she's patient for a young person. Most young people, they don't have the time of day for old people.
Like of course
she.
Not.
She was very, very patient. And, you know, she's pretty funny. She's funny, I would say. And she's hot. I would f*** her if I had, you know, flexibility in my arms and fingers.
Well, thank you, Jerry. Hey, Jerry, can we talk to Robin a little bit more?
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Robin! Robin! Hi. Oh, sorry.
Oh, she's my a daughter, trip, that Jerry.
I know. Jerry, she's can be overwhelming.
So you deal with it well, Robin. You deal with it. And I would also assume, because you have all this patience, because another person that you know, who we do not know, is a fascinating character named Angela Davison.
Oh, yes. I met Angela when, you know, sometimes I teach writing, comedy writing, and I met her just in the hallway, actually. We were both going to the bathroom. And, you know, she bumped me, and I was like, wow, okay, excuse me. And she kind of just, like, spat in my face, and I was just like, wow. But I let it go because she's young, you know, needs time to learn. But, yeah, she's a young poet coming up in the scene in New York City. Her stuff is pretty powerful,
yeah.
You know, some would say terrifying. But, yeah, that's the...
And is she around? Can we talk to her real quick?
Hold on a second.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Angela.
Who is this?
Hi, Angela. It's Ken. I'm the host of a little radio show called This Show Is So Gay.
Okay, fine. Uh-huh. What do you want?
Angela, I was wondering, it's our last episode of the year, and I was wondering if you maybe could do a poem for us just about This Show Is So Gay.
Give me a minute.
Okay.
Poetry. It's the end of the year. The Mayans said it was over, but clearly they don't know that it's not clear that they were wrong. I am angry because I ran out of conditioner. Now my hair is looking like a kitchen sink. What? No. Empowerment. This show is gay? Fine, I'm gay. I like it, and I'll do it in the hay.
Thank you. I didn't know if there was a pause there. That was the end, right?
That was the end.
Okay.
That was the end of my poem.
Thank you, Angela. That was lovely. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Ken.
Okay. Can we talk to Robin?
Robin!
Oh.
So, you know, I have a soft spot for the youth.
Yeah.
I really do.
That's fantastic. Now, you have, like, you actually are diagnosed with multiple personality disorder, right? Like, this is an actual thing.
You know, sometimes I wish it was, because then maybe I could get medicinal marijuana, but no. Just the state of affairs here.
Love it. Love it. Now, this has absolutely nothing to do with our show, but which is really a good setup. But you commented on your Facebook page about something that has, again, nothing to do with our show, but I would love to talk about it because I didn't see a lot of press around it. Caroline Wozniacki doing an impression of Serena Williams.
Ooh.
Right?
And to catch her on the alley.
Set up the story for people if they didn't hear, because it didn't really get, you know, I'm a crazy tennis player, so it popped up in my circles. But for people who didn't hear, how would you describe what happened?
All right. So she's a tennis phenom, just like Serena. And I guess at some charity event, some charity tennis match, she decided it would be funny to stuff her shirt and the back of her tennis skirt with towels to look, quote unquote, look like Serena,
uh-huh.
And then proceeded to like play tennis and grunt and be all Serena-esque. And everyone was laughing and thought it was so funny.
But you're a comedian. Wasn't that funny?
Oh, stop it. No. You know, it was just insulting.
Yeah.
But it's one thing if Serena had been there,
right,
and Serena was then imitating her and they were making fun of each other, then it'd be like, ha ha ha, that's so funny. These guys are friends. But it just had that, you know, it just had that racial overtone.
Yeah.
It's just not cute. And I was really surprised by the fact that no one responded. Like, I was outraged. I was tweeting. I tweeted her and everything. And no one, I don't know, people were just like,
Oh, the normalizing that happened afterwards. I mean, the number of stories I read, oh, no, it's okay, they're friends, or no, it's okay because Djokovic impersonated Maria Sharapova, and I'm reading, yeah, that's the same.
Yeah, exactly.
That's totally the same.
Serena had come and said, oh, okay, you know, it's fine, everybody, stop freaking out. Then I would have been like, girl, you're wrong, but okay.
Yeah. All right, we wanted to give that a shout-out because I kind of am annoyed that as someone who teaches courses in race at college campuses, I just couldn't believe that it got no press. It really didn't get very much press.
So. None at all.
And speaking of college campuses, and I was watching little clips from Come Out, Stay Out, you've had the experience of going to different colleges and talking about your own experience.
Yeah, I do. I work with a really great agency called Contemporary Issues Agency.
Uh-huh.
And they send me to colleges to talk about my coming out experience and to sort of give advice, pep talk, be a presence for LGBT youth and their allies.
Great.
On college campuses all around. And it's been really, really enriching. Like, I get so much positive feedback from students. I was just at Delaware Community College in November, and you know, the number of people that come up to me, it was a very interesting group, too. There was a woman, she was from West Africa, and she was like, no one ever talks about this in my country.
Yeah.
And she was so, like, surprised by our ability to sit in a room and, like, have this open conversation. And then there was a dad whose son had just come out, and he saw the flyer, and he was like, I just need some help. And, you know, I told him about PFLAG and other support groups that could help him through it. And then the students came up, and they were just, like, so excited and happy to have a gay person.
Love that.
Yeah, so I do that. And then I also do, you know, stand-up. I was at Cornell also in November, which was really fun.
Those are some stressed-out students. They need comedy.
Oh, my gosh. Those kids, they are so smart and so they're, like, the ultimate overachievers. I was like, you guys are making me exhausted. Seriously. Like,
stop telling me about your life. That's awesome. Yeah. Now, what do you have coming up that we should all know about?
I am in LA right now for pilot season.
Fantastic.
So auditioning, and I've got shows in January, one at Hamburger Mary's on January 15th.
How fun. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and then, you know, I've just been working on my series and trying to get videos up and out as quickly as possible and working on all my other projects. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, look, I hope you get the diagnosis because I wish medical marijuana for you because that's great. You know, I'm here to help, I guess. But I look.
Well, I don't really smoke.
Yeah, nor I. Look, I adore your voice. I've been watching so many clips. And by the way, we should put out there that they could even go online and find financial advice from you.
Oh, my gosh, I know.
That's fantastic.
I am so cheap.
They can find financial advice. They can learn how to make their own suit for their wedding.
I know. There's so much fun stuff online now.
There's so much fun stuff. To say that you are multi-talented does not begin to describe it. You are hilarious.
You.
You are just one of the greatest examples. And what a great way for us to finish the year of just using your voice in a way to make people laugh, to give people insight, to talk about yourself in a way that obviously leads to catharsis for other people. But I have no greater respect for those folks who tell us, pause for a second, folks, you can laugh, you can have a good time, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's a requirement.
It's a requirement. So
we should go into 2013 laughing as much as possible.
Look at that. Perfect. So, folks, stroll on over to robincloudcomedy.com, and you can learn all about the amazing stuff that Robin is doing. Robin, what a great way to end the year.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing.
I will, for sure.
Awesome. Thanks, Robin. All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have a little bit of time left on this episode 195, our last episode of 2012. First off, thanks to our listener, Lance, who forwarded us an op-ed over on the Huffington Post by Guy Branum, who is a writer and a comedian called Yes, Nate Silver,
you are a gay statistician. And this is a great piece. So we talked about this last week. Jody and I talked about this in our news segment. Netta Ulaby and I discussed it a little bit earlier on this week's show. And it's actually a topic of conversation for us for next week's show with the editor-in-chief of The Advocate magazine, Matthew Breen. So this is a great piece. So stroll on over to Huffington Post and type in, yes, Nate Silver, you are a gay statistician. And it's Guy Branum's musings on everything that we've been talking about how Nate Silver is kind of disavowing a lifestyle that he either perceives or knows, we're not too sure. And of course, all the drama's going down in the comments section. I think that I agree with Lance that people totally misunderstood what Guy Branum was putting out there. But go check it out, read it for yourself, let us know what you think. Serena Williams, we're updating the story we just covered with Robin Cloud, comedian Robin Cloud. Serena Williams did come out with a statement to say that she's okay with what Caroline Wozniacki did, that impression of her, they're friends, so it's okay. Problematic. Very problematic. And our last update, again, for Robin Cloud, I got to find out what she did. I did indeed go see Les Mis during this Christmas holiday. It wasn't packed. It wasn't a packed theater, but I did go see Les Mis, as gay Jews are wont to do on such a holiday. A lot of retrospectives going on right now. Really great ones going on over at The Advocate. They have the top 10 news stories of 2012, the top 10 gay news stories. Some we covered, some we didn't. At number 10, Prop 8 and DOMA await Supreme Court hearing. Obviously, that's going to be a big story for us in 2013, so we'll be talking about that a lot. Number 9, Kirk Cameron's comments. I don't know. I don't see how that's a big story. And as we talked about on the show earlier this year, it frustrates me that that's a story at all, because all he's really looking for is press. And we gave it to him. So there you go. At number 8, Ellen DeGeneres beats out the 1 million moms to keep her job at JCPenney. 1 million moms being quite the little misnomer there, because I think there's like 2,000 of them or maybe 15,000 of them. But say there's even 80,000 of them, not even close to 1 million. At The Advocate's number 7, GOP's presidential homophobes is their number 7 top LGBT story of the year. And so a lot about Rick Santorum, Paul Ryan, all those things that we talked about. At number 6, North Carolina pastors in a panic. We talked about that a little bit, not a ton. With interfaith coalitions that support marriage equality sprouting up around the country, anti-gay conservative Christians went on the defensive. North Carolina pastor Sean Harris said parents should, quote, punch and crack the limp wrists of children who exhibit gender variant behavior. So, you know, there's that. Jeez. I mean, come on. This is a pastor. This is a pastor. Number 5, the number 5 top 10 LGBT news stories of the year, according to The Advocate. A dad teaches the world about parenting gender variant kids. And this is German father Nils Pickert, who told the feminist magazine Emma that he sometimes wears skirts to support his preschool-age son, who prefers to wear skirts and dresses. Love that story. And number 4, Kansas lawmakers try to legalize discrimination. All the nutty things that are happening there in Kansas. Not a place I could live. Not a place I could live. I'm just saying that. Number 3, Frank Ocean makes history. This is R&B artist Frank Ocean, who came out of the closet, nominated for a freaking ton of Grammy Awards. Big, big deal. Would love to get Frank Ocean on the show. So, hey, if you have contacts, let us know. Number 2, President Obama finally evolves. This is President Obama with Robin Roberts saying that his position has developed and he supports gay marriage. That was an amazing story. And the number 1 story, number 1 top LGBT news story of 2012, according to The Advocate, is Chick-fil-A and all the brouhaha about Chick-fil-A. Holy cow, did we spend a lot of time on this show, So Gay, in 2012 talking about Chick-fil-A. I wrote an op-ed about it for the Huffington Post, and people yelled at me. They wanted this to be a very important story. I was trying to move on to other important stories like, I don't know, the fact that gay men can't give blood and what we need to do to correct that. But Chick-fil-A dominated the headlines this year in 2012. So we will see what's coming up next year. And as I just mentioned, we can talk about all of these things with the editor-in-chief of The Advocate, Matthew Breen, who will be on next week's show. And we have a very special guest to look at what's coming up in 2013. You will have to tune in next week to find out who that is. But of course, you can learn all about the amazing things that are happening on This Show Is So Gay by strolling on over to thisshowissogay.com. You can see who's coming up on the show. You can listen to every single show. This is episode 195. There's 194 other episodes that you can spend your holiday vacation listening to all the way back to episode number one. And of course, because it's episode 195, that means episode 200 is coming up. And holy cow, do we have a party planned for that one. So that's really exciting. Send us an email like Lance did. Lance sent us a story. Other of you have sent us guest suggestions. We try to get them, but we can't know who you want on This Show Is So Gay unless you take the time to send us a story and let us know. And you can, of course, send that guest suggestion, send that story idea, whatever it is, on over to Ken at thisshowissogay.com. And of course, you just must stroll on over to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What an absolute pleasure closing out this year with Netta Ullaby and Robin Cloud, and of course, spending some time with all of you who I cannot tell you how appreciative everyone is here at This Show Is So Gay, that you guys listen to the show, that you write us emails, that you join us on Facebook. Everything that you do to make this just an incredible experience for us and hopefully an incredible experience for you too. Please keep on listening. Hey, tell a friend about the show. It is almost 2013. In 2013, we want you to get out there. Go with the theme of the show. Use your voice to make a difference in this world around you, to raise up the voices of your brothers and sisters who are struggling to get their voices on the table. You know how to best use your voice. Maybe it's a radio show. Maybe it's a movie night. Maybe it's going to Capitol Hill. Whatever it is that you do so well to use your voice to make a difference, get out there in 2013 and do it. And of course, while you're using your voice, please remember, it'll give you power. Why be gay when you can be so gay?
May I suggest to you, may I suggest this is the best part of your life? May I suggest this time is blessed for you, this time is blessed and shining almost blinding bright. Just turn your head and you'll begin to see the thousand reasons that were just beyond your sight. The reasons why I suggest to you, why I suggest this is the best part of your life. There is a world that's been addressed to you, addressed to you, intended only for your eyes. A secret world, like a treasure chest to you, of private scenes and brilliant dreams that mesmerize. A lover's trusting smile, a tiny baby's hands, the million stars that fill the turning sky at night. Oh, I suggest to you, oh, I suggest this is the best part of your life. There is a hope that's been expressed in you, the hope of seven generations, maybe more. And this is the faith that they invest in you. It's that you'll do one better than was done before. Inside